3 of our What's Killing My Kale episode about beneficial insects and pollinators. We're going to be talking again with Karen Jopla in this part and talking specifically about pesticides. So I know some of the people listening are using pesticides, some are not. For the sake of those who are not, let's start out with just talking about drift and sort of mitigating the impacts of pesticide drift from neighboring fields onto habitat that you have on your own farm. So yeah. You just gave one good example about, you know, creating a buffer that's not attractive to pollinators. Mm-hmm. Are there any other suggestions you have or things to think about?
Yeah, I think one thing to be mindful of is how pesticides actually, how they're drifting. Mm-hmm. How are they moving into habitat? And so one way that they do that is through dust from coated seeds. Sometimes it's volatilization from a neighbor that's spraying and it's moving into your farm. Movement through water or wind erosion or contaminated soils. It depends on what that neighbor is using. Mm-hmm. Certain pesticides are stronger or more persistent in the environment. Yeah. And one group of insecticides that we're particularly concerned about are neonicotinoids. Those are really persistent in the environment. And if you know that your neighbor is using these, and a lot of conventional farmers do use them as seed treatments, we recommend not putting habitat any closer than 125 feet from that.
Is that true of all neonics? I know, like, imidacloprid has been maybe shown to be more toxic to bees than other neonics.
As a rule, at this point, there's still a lot that we need to learn about the impacts to bees and other beneficial insects. But at this point, we feel strongly that a really big buffer is necessary. Mm-hmm. Or if you're, for example, if you're converting soil or converting a field that used to be in production, I wouldn't put in anything that is attractive to a pollinator, whether it's clover or wildflowers, for 2 years after that neonic has been seeded. So if, let's say this year somebody planted it into a treated soybean, you wouldn't want to put in your habitat for 2 more seasons because it could be taken up and then basically toxic to the bees. So those are, you know, we recommend a buffer of 125 feet, which, you know, this is the burden that a lot of organic farmers have to bear, which is that they are the ones that have to protect their crop or their habitat. But it's the same this way. You can establish windbreaks that are taller. We would recommend something like a conifer, like an evergreen type windbreak. They're slower growing, but they aren't flowering, and they're not going to create something that's attractive to pollinators. And really talking to your neighbor.
Yeah.
I think it's really important. Not just trying to constantly play defensive, but actually talking to the neighbor. Our neighbor is really, really sensitive to our needs and the needs that we have for organic standards.
Yeah.
And so he's really responsible about when he sprays, and it's just the perfect wind conditions and weather. And so, I mean, you can resolve to have different farming practices, but they can be, you know, somewhat compatible.
Right.
And still protect your beneficial insects.
Yeah. One tool that we promote a lot is DriftWatch. And I guess I talk to a lot of commercial applicators who really do check it all the time. So that's good news.
Yeah.
But again, it's just a tool. And I think, like you were saying, talking to your neighbor is often the most important thing you can do, but also often a really hard thing to do.
Yeah, and it can be hard, too, if your neighbor is absent. Like you have a non-operator.
A renter.
Yeah. So it might take a little bit of tracking down, but I think it's still worth trying to cultivate that relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Yeah, so habitat placement is really important because you don't want to put your marginal land that's next to your neighbor might be, you might think that that's a great place for a pollinator habitat, but you don't want to put it in and then just poison, right. poison the wildlife that you're trying to attract. So that's something that we're really, it's often not discussed very much because it's a little uncomfortable, but it's really important.
Yeah. Okay. So then I guess shifting gears a little bit to farmers who are choosing to apply pesticides on their farm. Just what are, you mentioned some of the things that you think about if you are going to apply.
I would say the first thing to do is to try to prevent application in any way you can. So using IPM methods, monitoring and scouting around the farm, using cultural controls, whether that's row cover or just like timing of when you're planting, because you are aware of the life cycle of the pest that you're trying to avoid. Using habitat controls, like putting in these beneficial insect kind of patches throughout the farm that can help keep pests at a manageable level. So those are all the preventative things that I think should be used before even thinking about applying any pesticides. But once you've maybe reached that economic threshold, choosing pesticides that have reduced, or not reduced, but you know, the least toxicity to beneficial insects. You want to choose things that are targeted to the insect, to the pest insects that you're trying to control, like BT on brassicas, for example, is generally not thought to be toxic to bees. There are a lot of good resources. One of the resources that I refer to a lot when working with farmers is the University of California IPM website. It's, if you were to look up just bee precaution pesticide ratings, it's vast, and it gives you all kinds of ideas about what's, you know, if it's not at all toxic or has sort of medium toxicity or is highly toxic to bees. So I use that tool a lot.
So one question that I asked Elena, I'll also ask you, is there's this perception that the best time to spray is at nighttime because that's when pollinators are least active. Like, I've heard a lot of people saying go and spray right around sunset. That's also when a lot of temperature inversions are happening. So what are your thoughts on timing? And like, do you think this idea that spraying in the evening when pollinators are less active is accurate? Is that just some pollinators that are less accurate, the majority are less active?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good recommendation, but it's not a perfect recommendation. It's you will likely still have some collateral damage. And you mentioned temperature inversions. Yeah, that's real. So we recommend a perfectly still evening is not ideal for spraying. You would actually want something with gentle winds of 2 to 9 miles per hour, so that you don't have, because during a temperature inversion, if you've got that pesticide in the lingering kind of in the air, it can travel for miles. So that's can be really dangerous.
Yeah, and I think we actually say 3 to 9 even.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's amazing.
So it's counterintuitive.
I know. And so that's the whole thing about, yes, if you do need to spray, really targeting, you know, in that evening hour, even after sun goes down, while after sun goes down. And trying to prevent having to do it in the first place. And thinking about, because even spraying in those evening hours, there are a lot of beneficial insects that are active during those evening hours. And so there, and it might not be bees, but it might be lacewings, it might be beetles that are obviously going to be harmed by those broad spectrum pesticides. So it's not a perfect rule.
Yeah.
But for bee conservation, it's better than any other time of day.
Maybe one other thing, one other kind of misconception that I think is really important to talk about is this idea that pesticides labeled for organic systems are safer necessarily or better.
Yeah, some of them can be really toxic.
I guess I've heard people more from a like a worker safety perspective, but people say, oh, I don't need to wear a respirator with that or gloves, even though it's on the label because it's organic. And I would assume that maybe that same logic applies to like toxicity to insects.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about any kind of pesticide. It's meant to do harm. To little things or to, I'm sure it has some harmful impacts even on the applicator. And so it's, organic is often misunderstood, but it really means that it's not synthetic. But it can still be quite harmful. So, it's a good point.
Just good to think about. All right. So any other kind of last things you wanted to talk about? Or?
I guess I would say to listeners, I'd be happy to work with you. That's my job. First, contact your local NRCS office and have them request me because they all should know about me. But I travel and I would love to get out and see some of your farms and talk to you about the issues that you're dealing with. And
you are the person in Minnesota who does this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. Yeah. So the Xerces Society is, I should back up, I should have said this at the very beginning, but we're a nonprofit wildlife conservation organization for invertebrates, kind of like the Audubon Society.
Yeah.
And we're based out of Portland, Oregon, but there's staff all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And there are only two of us in Minnesota, or two full-time people. And I am the only one who works full-time with NRCS.
Okay.
And so I'm available.
And okay. So you just go to your local NRCS office and say, I want to talk to Karen.
Or you could reach out to me directly, and I would probably loop in your local NRCS office because they have a lot of resources for you.
Yeah, and how would someone do that?
You could email me. And that is, I'll just spell out my name. My name's Karin, Karin.Jokela, Jokela, at Xerces, and that's Xerces. .org, and maybe there'll be notes in the podcast interview or something that you can find those details as well.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing all of your knowledge, your work with us. You are
welcome. You're doing good work here with these podcasts.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this month's episode of What's Killing My Kale about beneficial insects and pollinators. We hope you were able to get some useful tips, things that you can implement on your farm, and tune in next month for a new episode.